Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell. Appreciate you joining me for this Wednesday afternoon. We've had a busy day of local news, but we're going to start with national news. Just in within the last hour, President Donald Trump has become the first U.S. president to be impeached twice as the U.S. House of Representatives voted 232 to 197 in favor of impeaching him. On a local level, Orange County representative in the House, David Price, took 30 seconds to speak in favor of impeachment, saying that President Trump's conduct has been, quote, criminal, impeachable, and profoundly threatening to our democracy. He ended his time by saying, if that is not impeachable, I do not know what is, when talking about the insurrection scene last Wednesday, just 1 week ago, at the U.S. Capitol building. That is the big news out of Washington, and you will be able to hear a lot more of that as we get CBS updates through the rest of the evening. Turning to our local news here, Wednesday was the first day, is the first day UNC students can begin returning to campus to live in single occupancy rooms for this upcoming spring semester. But we just learned earlier today a cluster of positive cases in one of those residence halls has been reported for the first time in several months. An alert from UNC shared Wednesday afternoon said a group of students who lived in Carmichael Residence Hall over winter break have tested positive for COVID-19, according to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. Remember, a cluster is defined by a collection of five or more cases. According to the university, the individuals in this cluster have been identified. They are isolating and receiving medical monitoring with the help of the Orange County Health Department, and they are working to record the cases and identify additional potential exposures. And Carolina also said in a separate release to Chapelboro that Carolina Housing has reached out to students potentially moving back into Carmichael Residence Hall and said, if you want to switch for this upcoming spring semester, you can. Remember, UNC is starting their semester this spring remotely for the first 3 weeks, despite initially hoping to be able to do in-person learning, but they pushed that back until February. However, students are still allowed to come and live on campus. About 3,500 students could do so, depending on what their housing situation is and if they've, of course, worked out a contract with Carolina Housing. During the beginning of the fall semester, UNC saw more than a dozen clusters reported among several residence halls and Greek life houses. And since the beginning of the pandemic, UNC has reported 1,446 students and 185 employees as having tested positive on their Carolina Together dashboard. In some K-12 education news, the Orange County Schools System voted earlier this week to push back its restart of in-person learning for many of its students. Kindergartners and first graders returned to classrooms on Monday, but later in the day, the school board voted 4-3 to delay second graders through high schoolers coming back in this semester for the hybrid learning model. They were supposed to come back on January 25th. Now that will be pushed back until February or March. The board made this decision after hearing updates from the ABC Collaborative and the Orange County Health Department on North Carolina's ongoing COVID-19 trends, which continue to worsen and set some records. The students will continue their entirely remote model for the next 9 weeks. It's pretty similar to a plan that Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools has laid out at the moment, which would have the earliest possible date for students to return to a hybrid learning model and return to classrooms to be March. Governor Roy Cooper held a COVID-19 update press conference yesterday, but he also took time to speak about that insurrection at the Capitol building that we saw last week that President Trump has now been impeached for. Cooper said dangerous rhetoric from government officials like Trump not only led to the attack, but also played a role in the ongoing rise of COVID-19 deaths.
Words are powerful and can be used to help or harm. Last week, we saw how the words of elected leaders can cost lives. Lies and misinformation have cost lives during this pandemic as well. Our nation experienced a one-day peak in reported COVID-19 deaths on Thursday with 4,085. More people could be alive today, but for dangerous falsehoods that have been spread about the critical importance of masks, social distancing, and other common sense safety rules. Words matter. People listen to leaders and often follow their calls and imitate their actions. As the death toll from this pandemic continues to increase, our leaders must listen to science, focus on the facts, and tell the truth with their words and the examples that they set.
Once again, that was North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper speaking Tuesday on the violent demonstrations seen 1 week ago in Washington, D.C. 97.9 The Hill's Elk Harris also has a report on just how that event came to be and the UNC officials speaking about the role that language from government officials and social media played in the chaos.
As we reflect on the disarray at the Capitol last week, two UNC professors weigh in on how social media, select news organizations, and dangerous rhetoric escalated into an act of violence on our American democracy. Jonathan Weiler is a professor of global studies at UNC and the co-author of a book called Authoritarianism and Polarization in American Politics. Weiler said there's an increasingly, quote, conspiratorial informational ecosystem that has been misguiding Americans for years. He said conservative government officials and media outlets have destroyed the relationship between people's fervently held beliefs and reality.
And so part of what frustrates me, as I said, about enablers, including some of whom are now very belatedly horrified by what they're witnessing, is that they were very much part of this growing, really pandemic of disinformation. And they themselves have been super spreaders. And now we are, you know, yielding the very bitter fruits of that.
Weiler said, it's not surprising that this rampant disinformation has subsequently caused an attack on our democracy, especially considering the current administration's flagrant use of social media.
We were just talking about this kind of ecosystem of conspiratorial disinformation that motivates some, you know, significant portion of the population to believe that their leaders, their institutions are unjust, illegitimate, need to be overthrown, and that it doesn't, you know, and that violence is an acceptable means of doing so.
Currently, in the digital age, Weiler thinks this problem of disinformation is going to be very difficult to solve.
It will help some when Joe Biden becomes president and at least uses different language to communicate with Americans and to talk about what are the acceptable boundaries of political behavior. But the larger and longer term problem of disinformation, of people living in really different realities, is, I'm afraid for the time being, an intractable one.
Dean Freelon is an associate professor in UNC School of Media and Journalism, whose research primarily focuses on political expression through digital media. Freelon said the combination of social media and partisan coverage has greatly affected how Americans shape their political ideologies.
Many people who are on the right side of the political spectrum have really been captured within an exclusive right-wing media ecosystem that feeds them, to be honest, lies, right? So the lie that Biden lost the election, the lie that there's a lot of voter fraud that really swung the election toward Biden, that he wouldn't have won without voter fraud, and all of this. And they believe this. And it's not just the social media companies. It's also alternative media outlets like Newsmax and OAN, and to some extent Fox News.
Freelon said many people were heavily influenced by these lies and followed them all the way to the steps of the Capitol building. In light of the recent insurrection, to combat the spread of misinformation, social media outlets like Twitter and Facebook have suspended President Trump's accounts. Last Thursday, Facebook chief executive Mark Zuckerberg said the social media giant is banning President Trump indefinitely. Freelon said having social media platforms create clearer guidelines will help to mitigate the spread of false information, especially as there are very few other regulations limiting speech, as defined by the First Amendment.
So in the absence of legislation to regulate social media companies, and of course any such legislation would need to be consistent with the First Amendment, I think, yes, we are looking at the social media companies to be arbiters of appropriate speech, basically. And we have private enterprise in this country, we have private property in this country, and these social media platforms are their property, and they can say what goes and does not go on those platforms.
You can hear more of these conversations with Professor Weiler and Freelon by visiting chapelboro.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
It is 5:17 here on The Hill, our community calendar giveaway outside our station and studio here at University Place has wrapped up. We had a lot of people come by to get those free calendars as well as vouchers for a free Chick-fil-A sandwich. As the afternoon went on, it was a lovely day for it. We had a great time. And if you missed out, don't worry. You can still be part of the action by swinging by our studio or by going to chapelboro.com/community-calendar-2021 for a full list of locations for where you can get your own copy of our first ever community calendar. We had UNC men's basketball in action Tuesday night. They made it 3 victories in a row after a strong performance on the offensive glass and double-doubles from senior Garrison Brooks and sophomore Armando Baycott to power the Heels through Syracuse 81-75. They had to play against that tough 2-3 zone defense on just a 4-day notice after the Heels' scheduled game against Clemson was postponed, and this one was scheduled, but Carolina relied on balanced scoring through the roster in order to break it and find some success. They did have some times where they struggled on offense, but they were the ones who got the buckets in the last few minutes, with Armando Baycott getting 2 big offensive rebounds and 2 buckets, and the Heels using good free throw shooting to pull away in the final minutes. Head coach Roy Williams said after the game it was one of the team's most complete finishes to a game this year. Up next for the men's program, Florida State this Saturday with tip-off at noon. In some UNC women's soccer news, junior Brianna Pinto will enter Wednesday's NWSL draft following the NCAA women's soccer tournament in May. The Chapel Hill player has had an outstanding career. A Durham native, she scored 29 goals and dished out 16 assists in her 3 seasons with the Tar Heels, earning her first team All-American status this fall. Once again, the NCAA moved its men and women's soccer tournaments to the spring due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and even though she will be drafted tonight, she will have the chance to play in that game. And the star midfielder said on Twitter Tuesday that she believes that she has unfinished business with the team in order to chase that national title. She wrote, quote, "To wear the Carolina uniform, learn from a world-class coaching staff, and play alongside a group of empowered and resilient women has been a dream come true." We'll have to see where Pinto gets drafted. Later on tonight, the NWSL draft is scheduled to begin at 7 p.m. It is 5:27. Thanks so much for joining me today. One last piece of local news before we get to an interview with Jody Baxt of Array Sustainable Living. A foundation has ended the lease for the suspended Kappa Sigma fraternity at UNC after the chapter was linked to a drug trafficking ring. Several news outlets reported on Wednesday the lease for the chapter living at the house off West Cameron Avenue will now end on January 18th, and that date represents exactly 1 month after local and federal law enforcement officials announced that 2 of the fraternity's members were charged in October with federal drug crimes. Court filings detailed illegal drug activity also involving UNC chapters of Phi Gamma Delta and Beta Theta Pi fraternities during the time period of 2017 and the spring of 2020. Both of those chapters have since been suspended by the university as well. You can find our full coverage of the DEA investigation on chapelboro.com.